The beauty of it is that when I did give my life to Christ, my whole idea of coaching transformed from being a coach that was supposed to create athletes and win to somebody that wanted to have authentic relationships and to be a positive impact on their life.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who experience the life-changing love of Jesus, stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives. Stories of His Glory podcast is grateful to Copper Dog Waffles and Coffee for their support of FCA and youth athletics. Copper Dog is located on historic Main Street in Mandan and has the best gourmet waffles and custom coffee drinks. When you go, try my favorite, the Rookie, and definitely try pairing it with one of their amazing coffees. Stop in today for a unique experience, something unlike anything else you'll see in North Dakota. Sweet or savory, there's something for everyone at Copper Dog in Mandan. Welcome to today's episode of Stories of His Glory podcast. I'm Ryan Jungling, Area Director with FCA in North Dakota, and today I'm excited to introduce you to Ev and Terry Nelson. Ev spent nearly four decades as a coach and teacher, and Terry spent years owning a flower shop and working with kids prior to both Ev and Terry coming on staff with FCA at UND in 2013 and 2015. Listen in as Ev and Terry share their story, how Jesus transformed their lives, and how God use their call into ministry to transform FCA on the UND campus. Here's my conversation with Ev and Terry Nelson. Welcome into the podcast today. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Thanks, Ryan. I think we're both excited to be here and a little bit nervous because we're not sure where it's going to go, but I think both of us had a wonderful run with FCA, and for me coaching, and for Terry, she's had impact on so many people.
For sure. Yeah. I'm excited to, as we share stories and kind of unpack that a little bit, to hear more about that for sure. So as we get started, Terry, how about we start with you a little bit, just to the listeners and to me, because we've met a number of times, but don't know a ton about you outside of what I've known through FCA. And so, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I can tell you I grew up in a small town. I didn't play sports. I didn't necessarily even like sports. I had two sisters, though, that played. I got to think about it. Ivan and I actually went to the same school. It was a small town. He's 5 years older than me, so he's a lot older than me. And we met, and I was in junior high, and he was a senior, and we started corresponding when he went off to college, and I don't know, God was like telling me, that's the guy you're going to marry, and so it ended up being the guy that I married. We got married when I was a junior, and he was a sophomore in college. And so I was 16 and he was 21. And in January, we'll be married 50 years. So that's only because of God.
Yeah.
And maybe a shotgun from my dad.
So grew up in the same town. That's incredible. And
we grew up in Mohall.
Mohall, yes.
Yeah. And Mohall was a pretty good athletic town in the 70s.
For sure.
So we were together and got married young, and I finished up college and we headed out on a coaching career that started in Phillips, South Dakota, and we kind of moved around the country. We were in at Bismarck High, we were in Missouri, we were in Wisconsin, and then ended up in Grand Forks at Grand Forks Central. So 38 years of coaching, and my wonderful wife followed me wherever we went and raised our family.
He was so lucky.
Yeah. Raised our family. So
yeah,
we were blessed.
Yeah. Obviously, a lot of moving in that, a lot of relocating. Tell us about, before you get into the coaching side, like in Mohall, I've heard of that. I know Mohall, but I've heard of the success that Mohall had and stuff like that. What were your sports when you were in high school? Where'd you go to college? That kind of stuff.
Well, I played football, baseball, and track in Mohall, and went to Dickinson State and played football. Played a year of baseball there too. Yeah, I always loved sports. And really, my dad passed away when I was very young. I was 12 or 13 years old. And so coaches to me were an incredible influence. And I was attracted to them. I needed a male role model. And we had some incredible coaches in Mohall. Some of them had a real impact on me positively. Others, maybe not so much. I think early in my career, I tried to model some of the guys that maybe if I could have done it over again, I would have done it in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know the coaches have impact and they have tremendous impact. Whether or not that impact is for the positive or in the negative, right, is definitely a really big part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you played football at Dickinson State. Was Bijou there yet? Or is this like...
Hank and I came to Dickinson State the same year.
Okay.
He was a first-year coach in the fall of 1972, and I was a freshman the fall of 1972. So I've known Henry for a long time, and he's a good guy. Yeah, good coach.
Yeah. Now his name's all over that university and had a lot of success, and yeah, that's awesome. So you get into coaching, and Terry, you're...
I'm a young mother. I did go to college for a week.
Okay.
I thought I'd take this business machine class, and he went to South Dakota for an interview before he got hired, and I missed a couple of days, and I didn't do very well on the test, and I begged to quit. So that was my college, was 1 week. I just followed him, I guess, wherever he went. God had given me a gift for decorating and eyes to see things different, but it really wasn't anything with sports at all. Everything was more about house and decorating and plants and things. And then I got a job. I begged for a job in a flower shop in this small town when we had two kids, and I got that, and I didn't know what I was doing. But the Lord, I don't know, supplied all my needs, I guess. I grew up in a Christian family, and I went forward a lot every summer at Bible camp, but I just didn't quite understand a relationship with the Lord. So I always thought it was about I had to be better at this or I had to be good at this. And so I spent most of our married life trying to be good at something, and sports wasn't the thing that I ever tried. Everything else except sports was what I would try. Maybe if I was skinnier, or maybe if I could do this, or maybe if I didn't do that. Maybe my good friend Shelley, she got Jesus when she was young, but I couldn't. So as our kids grew up, we just would drop them off at confirmation and say, well, for me, I couldn't figure it out. Maybe they can figure it out at church. And Everett would say, we should go to church. And I'd be like, in my flower shop, I would count going to church as dropping off funeral flowers or wedding flowers or whatever, because... And if one broke, I went twice a day. And so I was always asking, why did so-and-so get cancer? Why are kids starving in Africa? I don't understand. No one would give me the answer. And I just didn't understand. And so we have four daughters. We lost three. We had miscarriages. And everybody was always like, just suck it up. Like, you didn't have something wrong with your child. And so... There was a lot of things. I was married young. I was 16. He didn't have any parents. We muddled through a lot of things together because I didn't go to my parents because they were upset with me when I got pregnant. So we just kind of learned on the fly a lot. And I knew he loved coaching and I would go wherever he went, but I knew I needed something for me. So that's where the flower shop things would come in. And we moved to Grand Forks. I said, we're going to buy a flower shop and you're going to have no say in it. You do your football thing and I'll do my flower shop thing.
Yeah. Like, you go get a job in South Dakota, and it sounds like you had multiple opportunities to coach in a lot of different places. How was it having a spouse? Because this is, Rachel and my story is similar in the, you know, she did not grow up in an athletic family. They weren't invested in sports at a young age. Coaching wasn't something that she was like, oh yeah, I'm going to marry a coach because I want to be around sports. That wasn't our story too. So how was it for you as a coach when your wife wasn't like the biggest cheerleader? I'm sure he was a cheerleader for you, but probably not giving advice on what play to run.
I think Terry is a little off base in that she was at every game. She may not have liked being there, but she was there for me.
For sure.
Yeah. And we went to a lot of different places, experienced a lot of different things, but just her loyalty to me meant that she went to games. And it may not have been her favorite thing, but our kids would pack up and we'd go to playoff games or wherever we were. She was doing what she was meant to do. And I guess that was to be my wife and whatever that took. And we just, like Terry said, early in our marriage, faith was not a big part of it. And so for me, football was probably more of a part of my life than it should have been. And as a result, I was gone a lot, and probably family and other things took second place to that sort of thing. Yeah, I guess that's a little bit of our story.
Yeah, so people in Grand Forks, you guys spent a decent amount of time in Grand Forks. So when did you come to Grand Forks to get a job at Central?
It was 1985. There was a job there that I figured we would only be there a year or two because my aspirations were to get back into college coaching. I'd been in college coaching for a couple of years, lost our job at Eau Claire, and so we were looking for work. And I thought Central, North Dakota, we know a little bit about it. We grew up in North Dakota. It'll be a good place to spend a year or two, and then we're going to be out of here. But God had other plans, unbeknownst to us, because I was so disappointed that I didn't get a couple of jobs that I applied for in that time frame. But, you know, you look back 25 years later and you know why we didn't get it. The plan was eventually to be part of the FCA ministry and to impact kids in a much different way than I did earlier in my coaching career.
Right. So you come to Central and then you stayed.
I have a funny story about that.
Yeah, for sure.
So he's been in college coaching and we have three little girls and we're at the stands at Cushman Field. And they have a box with, it's not covered with plastic or, you know, a plastic shield or glass. He's still thinking he's in college. This is before school starts. And there's a game and he's yelling like he's in college and everybody's turning around looking to see who's that. And the girls go, "Hey, Daddy." I'm like, "Don't let anybody know that's your dad." So I said they built the whole Cushman Field over for him because he ended up in the office before he even started school there.
Yeah, I set a record. I was in principal's office before I taught 1 hour of school at Central. You cannot beat that record. You can tie it, maybe,
yeah,
but you can't beat it.
Yeah, that's a big transition to go from a college level and how athletes are handled, right, at a college level versus a high school. And you had just said, like, you weren't walking with the Lord at that point. So let's dive into that side a little bit because, you know, and 1985, you're not walking with Jesus, you're coaching. And then by the time we jump ahead to the end of your career, you're both coming on staff with Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So walk us through that a little bit.
I always felt like God had been calling me for a long time, but I was pretty good at ignoring him. I felt like it was my responsibility to make sure that our kids got to church or where they needed to be, just as part of that checklist of things that needed to be done. I gave my life to Christ eventually on a school bus headed to Bismarck High for a playoff game in 2004. And that happened for a number of reasons. Number one, we had a daughter that was going through some really hard times, and it was really hard on our family and hard on Terry and I. And number two, Terry had given her life to Christ a few months before this. And number three, I had been watching two guys on our Central football staff for a few years that were believers. And I always wondered why they did what they did or why they didn't do what I did. And so it was a combination of things. But eventually, Christ pretty much brought me to my knees. I had nowhere else to go. And that was on that Saturday morning, headed on that school bus, and I surrendered my life to Christ on that day. And nobody really led me through to Christ. It just was something that I felt like, I don't know, it was that point of surrender. And I didn't really tell anybody, but after the game, and it was a cool game too, because we beat Bismarck High in three overtimes or something like that, I called Terry immediately and had told her what I had done. But honestly, at that point, I had no idea what that meant. Now what? It was basically where I was at.
And how old were you?
I don't know. How old was I? 2004. Do the math. That's a hard question.
Well, we were in our 40s.
Yeah, I was maybe 49, I think 50.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Stories of His Glory is brought to you by North Dakota Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where our mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. Across North Dakota, FCA is on the ground in weight rooms, huddles, and classrooms, building up bold leaders of faith through sports and scripture. Whether it's a student athlete discovering Jesus for the first time, or a coach finding strength in community, lives are being changed every season at FCA. Want to be a part of the movement? Visit fcand.org to get involved or support the mission. Now, let's get back to the story.
So, Terry, like, how about you? Like you said, you grew up in a Christian home, had, I know the altar call at camp or at a concert, like, yes, but then that wasn't what was happening in your life as an adult. So, what a few months before had been, how had God been working in your life?
Well, I had been in a flower shop and we were going through these things with our kids and God literally allowed me to be fat, sick and tired. And because I had a business partner and or else I would have probably left my flower shop sooner because we were so busy and I was gone and I felt so guilty as a mom because I could do it because he was a teacher. And he could get our kids to things in the summer where I missed out on that. And I'd come home at Christmas or on Christmas Eve night and hurry up and have Christmas and then go back to the shop the day after Christmas because it was crazy days. And we had weddings planned 3 years in advance and I just couldn't do it anymore. So I talked to my business partner and just said, I have to sell because I didn't want to wreck her life because it was going to change her life. But I just couldn't take it anymore. And I started going to this workout place. And in my life, I've always had weight issues and I was fat, sick, and tired. So I started going to work out and somebody handed me this kit to lose weight. And I didn't care what it was, but I lost like 36 pounds in 6 weeks. And I was like, I don't know what this stuff is, but I'm going to keep taking it. And so the girl that gave it to me didn't know really anything about it. I met this other girl who, it's so weird because Tana Thorfinson is her name, and her and I didn't know each other, but we knew everybody, but we didn't know each other, but we knew the same people. That was in April. And in June, before that, I would call her and ask her, what about this? How should I drink this shake? Or how should I do this? And she said, can I call you back? I'm going to go to Bible study. And for the first time in my life, when she said Bible study, the hair didn't stand up on the back of my head. There was something about Tana that made, because I saw Tana and Tana was cute and she had cute hair and she was a counselor at a school and I don't know. And so in April is when I met her and she asked me to go to Texas with her in June to this AdvoCare convention, health and wellness convention, which never in a million years would I even care about. But I said yes. And I didn't hardly know her. And we were in the airport and she said, I just want you to know there's an optional church service down in at this convention. And I didn't feel weird about it either. I said, yeah, I know. I read that it's Michael W. Smith. And I said, I know my sister has really been sick and she used to listen to him. I had no clue what he's saying. Anyway, I go with her and the optional church service comes on and out comes Michael W. Smith. And he's just is a normal guy. He has a piano. He's not like a preacher where I've heard Hell and Damnation and all that type of thing. And he just was funny. And he talked about how he wanted a wife. And this beautiful woman walked by the window and God, if she's to be my wife, have her walk by again. And she did. So, and he was, I don't know, but I didn't hear any music that he's saying. None of it resonated with me. I'd never heard it. And I really, truly believe that God made him come back out because he came back out after he was done with his sermon, which really wasn't a sermon, and said, I never do this. He goes, unless I'm at a concert, but I need to sing one more song. And so he sat down and he played the song Friends Are Friends Forever That's the only song I'd ever heard. And that was my sister's high school graduation song. And my mom had us sing it during the flood at the nursing home in Mohawk. And I started crying. And Tana, because they had kind of an altar call there. They said, anybody who wants to know Jesus, come back to this room. And I was like, no, I got to sit here and hear more about these vitamins. And Tana kept pushing me, and I went back there and I couldn't find the room. And I finally did. Some guy showed me the room, and I was actually literally praying all the way back there that I would get this big, tall guy like you that could give me all the answers to all my questions. And did I get that? No, I got like a 13-year-old looking girl that was soft and sweet. And I said, okay, it doesn't work for me. I just don't know how to. She said, it's just a relationship. You just ask Jesus into your heart and he'll come there and dwell there. And I went in that room, one kind of a person, an unsaved person who needed Jesus and needed a lot of answers. She didn't give me any answers, but I said, God, in that room, if you exist, you need to prove it to me. And I came out of that room a totally different person. I called him and said, we need to start going to church. And he said, what are you talking about? Aren't you at a vitamin convention or something? I said, yes, I know I am. But I asked Christ into my life. And it was a complete change. And I've heard so many testimonies on different people and how they're saved. But for me, I really feel like God did all these things. Like, I was so stubborn about everything. And he's, okay, it says in the Bible, ask me. And so I'm like, you need to prove that you exist. And for a year, I mean, it was like crazy things. Like, I would think about somebody and they would be there. It was like he would show me the beautiful sunset and the frost at my parents' house. And we were looking to find out how to grow. And we got in this Bible study with these people at this church, and they mentored us. And then after a year, then everything kind of went. Our daughter was really in deep places that we didn't know. And I didn't understand that either, because I thought, okay, I'm a Christian. I should. Everything's good now. No one ever told me that, okay, Satan might come after you and bad things happen to Christians too. I didn't really understand that. I thought God was punishing us there for a while. But we had to grow from scratch. So that's what we did. He changed our life. And then we had grown daughters and we had a grandchild. And we started telling our kids about Jesus, and they thought we were wacko. And they're like, what is wrong with you guys? You know, are you in a cult? What happened with you guys? You're not doing the things that you used to do. And it was, you know, people always say, if I had to do it over again, I wish that I would have known that before we got married or whatever. But that's not our story.
So, Ev, earlier Terry had said that you had suggested, earlier in your marriage, hey, we should go to church. And that wasn't something that she really wanted to do. And then she calls you and she's, I just accepted Christ. How did that work?
I didn't really understand any of it, to tell you the truth. But she came back and I could see changes in her. And she was very clear to me that this is what I did. I gave my life to Christ. I don't know what you want to do, but that's what I'm going to do. And so I guess, like I said earlier, I'd always been drawn to God. I felt like he'd been calling me, but I really didn't know what that meant. And I was pretty good at avoiding him or ignoring him. And I think just watching Terry and then watching the guys that I coached with and then us being in kind of turmoil with one of our daughters who was going through some really hard things, God was just moving me closer to him. And finally, that day on that school bus, it happened. And I just had nowhere else to go except to him.
But a really cool thing was, I know we haven't talked about FCA yet, but Everett had been introduced to Christ way back in Philip when we were first married, but had totally forgotten about it.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting story. FCA was in Philip High School, and that was 1976.
Okay, yep.
And I got a call from the principal and said, I don't know if you're interested, but your football team is going to be at FCA out at Burklocker's Ranch. And he was a pastor. and they had a place out in the country. And I went out there because I thought I was supposed to. And on that way back from that, whatever the kids were doing, we went into the house and they showed a video that FCA had put together that was good. And the pastor shared the gospel with me. But that seed was planted in 1976 or 77, whatever it was. And it took till 2004 for somebody to water it in a way that I surrendered.
Yeah. Wow. We'll get to it in just a little bit when we start talking about FCA, but that's such a big part of why the ministry exists.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
To be with people and
to plant seeds and how God uses that. Somebody else is watering that seed. Somebody else might see the harvest of it, but it's somebody needs to plant seeds. That's such a wonderful part of Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Wow. There's so many, as I've talked to so many people over the last 2.5 years about FCA, there's so many stories of, I knew FCA when I was in high school. I knew FCA when I was this. I went to an FCA camp, and just whether that's in the late 60s or early 70s or recently, it's just really cool to see just the power the ministry has. And then why don't we go, I'll ask you one question and then we'll get to the FCA question. So Ev, you came to Grand Forks Central and you ended up in the principal's office before the first day of school. So what does Ev, the coach who now knows Jesus, how does that change your perspective of coaching? Like you said earlier, you didn't really know what you didn't know right away.
Well, I think you buy into what you think a man is supposed to be. That involves a lot of things that are not godly. And that if you're not that kind of man, that you're weak. And I think I tried to emulate that. And I had coaches that were tough. And that's the kind of coach I wanted to be, or I thought I should be. The beauty of it is that when I did give my life to Christ, my whole idea of coaching transformed from being a coach that was supposed to create athletes and win to somebody that wanted to have authentic relationships and to be a positive impact on their life. And I think, obviously, if you can go back in history, you'd like to change all of those early things. But the blessing was is that I got to be part of a high school coaching career and an FCA ministry where we were around athletes and knew what our purpose was supposed to be.
Yeah, for sure. And there's some really strong coaches that you could model yourself after in that program.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. Yeah. So 2013, 2012, maybe 2013, how does Ev the coach become Ev the FCA staff person in northeastern North Dakota?
Well, I think as I decided to step away from teaching and coaching and being a believer, luckily I had some guys that really took me under their wing and really mentored and discipled me. And I knew that I wanted to do something that would involve my faith. I had no idea what that was going to be. I had some ideas, and I shared this with Mark Aradnick, who at the time was the state FCA director, and I had been involved with FCA at coaching clinics, going to luncheons, being part of the FCA ministry at Grand Forks Central, and trying to establish a game day chapel, which we called timeouts. I had done that and got to be part of that. Anyway, I asked Mark for prayer, and he mentioned FCA. And that was really the first I'd thought about it. And so I did start the process. The daunting part of FCA is that this all sounds great, but now we need to raise funds. And I wasn't sure how we were even going to do that, but God was good and he created a home team for us that blessed us in so many ways. And I had an advantage being 28 years at one high school. I had a lot of parents that believed in me, that trusted me. And so when I started going to people and telling them what my hope was for FCA, some of them got on board and were very generous. So, and those were the parents of athletes, I think, that I coached after my transformation. not so much before the transformation, but after.
Yeah. In support raising, that's where relationships really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
And you realize how strong some of those relationships are after you ask. And then people just are amazing. And it's really humbling and also very like, God, only you could do this. So you came on staff in 2013?
Yeah, I came on staff, I think it was September of 2013, initially as part-time, and continued to work on fundraising and also try to figure out what ministry was really about. And initially, we tried to establish some things in some of the high schools and junior highs in the area, the region. We called it Northeast North Dakota FCA. But a couple of things happened. One is Bubba Schweigert came back to UND as the head football coach. And I had known Bubba for many years as being a coach at Grand Forks Central, and he had been at UND before. And I was up in Grafton, and I remember getting a call from him. I had written him a note and just congratulated him on being the new head coach and just asked him, how would you feel about FCA being part of your program? And he called me. I was up in Grafton trying to do something with FCA up there, and he called me and said, definitely, let's get together. And he had quite an FCA history to him, too, because Roger Leip had been the chaplain at Southern Illinois, and that's where Bubba had been. So he knew what FCA was about. And so he opened some doors for us at UND that, you know, just really started to build the ministry. And that's where our momentum was at. And yeah, that's where it started out.
Yeah. So 2013, my brother was on the baseball team at the time.
Yeah. Actually, your brother spoke at Fields of Faith for us.
Okay. I don't even know if I knew that.
Yeah.
So my brother, Reed, spoke at FCA, you said, at Fields of Faith.
When I came on staff and was trying to establish some huddles in the area and whatever, UND had a past of FCA, and there was a huddle that was there. And your brother and a number of other baseball players were part of it. I did go there as an early staff member, and there were a few guys there. It was very, very small. But I knew that he had faith, and we were trying to put together Fields of Faith. And so I asked him to speak.
That's awesome.
And he did. And I actually still have the video. It's on YouTube if you want to actually hear what he said. So.
Okay. I'm going to definitely run that one down. That's awesome. Yeah. I was lucky enough to be a part of the early FCA movement when I was there. And so 2005 was my first year at UND. And then in the summer of 06, so the fall of 05, summer of 06 is when Quinn came to UND. And when Quinn came, he had emailed all the coaches and said, hey, if you have anybody that might be interested in FCA, please let them know. And Coach Ziegler called me. And I don't know, I don't think I was overly sharing my faith as a freshman. Maybe some comment that I had made on a recruiting visit or something. But yeah, he called me and he said, hey, there's this guy coming to town. He's going to start an FCA huddle. He would like you to be a part of it. Like, he's looking for people to be a part of it. So I was on that leadership team for 3 years, and we were pretty small, right? It's volunteer led, but Quinn was a really huge part of my life because he was a coach that he demonstrated what it looked like to live as a Christian coach. I just remember pushing, I can't remember what the gym is called next to the old Hislop weight room, but remember pushing boards across the gym floor, and he would stand over me and quote scripture.
Really?
It's like, this is wild.
Wow.
This is wild.
Awesome. And Quinn had moved on when we came on staff. There was another coach there that basically opened up the room and let the athletes have FCA. He really was not involved other than that. But I remember Quinn putting on a fundraising banquet at Grand Forks Central. And yeah, he got things going. And then it fell off a little bit. And then we tried to get it going again. And then it just kind of all of a sudden it was really,
right,
you know, back.
We had the relationship with Bubba, another coach on campus that, you know, and other coaches on campus then that I'm sure got on board. And
Yeah, Brian Jones with the basketball team. There's a lot of interesting stories. We don't have time to talk about
that. Yeah,
for sure. Day. Oh my gosh. Just to get into the gym at UND to watch basketball was a big deal. I finally tracked him down at a Samaritan's Feet event.
Oh yeah. Yep.
He was trapped with me and at the YMCA, and I asked him if I could come to practice, and he said, yeah, you can come. So I got there, and I remember it was about 3 or 4 weeks into going to practice every once in a while. I came home from school or from being there at practice, and I was so fired up because Coach Jones said, how you doing today? He talked to me.
After 2 weeks. And then Kid gave him a chair because he was standing there.
I was just standing there. One of the players who ended up being a big part of our FCA huddle went and got me a chair so I could sit down. So that was the beginning of it. It was just incredible how little things like that were just part of the process. And I'd look back at all of those stories and forgot some of them, but yeah, they're pretty cool.
Well, and it's a ministry of presence.
Yeah.
Just showing up and being there. I talk to my team about that all the time. You just have to be there. And you be there, that's where you build trust. And then it opens the doors to have conversations.
Yeah.
You end up having.
And I knew God was really working through him to keep showing up for 2 weeks straight and not even being talked to. I saw my husband be transformed through FCA with Christ more than I did just in our marriage. I saw it through FCA. And then there was days he would come home and he'd be like a little kid. At Christmas time, he'd be like, oh, Coach Jones gave me a t-shirt and Bubba gave me a whole outfit. And then he came home and he said, I'm going to start traveling with the football team at UND. And I was excited for him, but as a person who had held some resentment towards football because he was gone all the time.
Right.
Every weekend he was gone, and I thought, okay, now he's going to be gone all the time and he's not even going to be coaching and he's not even getting paid. Until one day I was having a little pity party in my own head, and he asked me to pack his backpack to go on the plane with the team. And I was in my head, I said, are you kidding me? You're a big boy. You can pack your own backpack. And God clearly said, you're readying the warrior for battle. Get your butt in there and pack that backpack. And I went in the bedroom and packed the backpack. And I was like, I am helping him go there and show the presence of Christ, because I am watching my husband, who was a yeller and had the whole Cushman Field built for him, turn into a man that had to stand on the sidelines. He would pat the guys' butts. He would pray with them. He would hand them water. He knows what's going on in the game, and he can't say one word. And all I watch him when I go to the games would be I'd watch him hang with these guys, or I'd watch him at the other end. And he was an encourager, and his presence, it was his presence. And yeah, the Lord really worked on me with that. I could see how he had changed so much from being this type of coach to being there for the team and for Baba, and then with the Bible studies with the basketball team and all. I was in awe. And when I started working with the girls, the one thing I said was, there's nothing sexier than watching your husband read the Bible. Talk to him about the Bible.
Yeah. You have this impact at growing at UND. Obviously, you're working with the football team, men's basketball. Sounds like you had some inroads to some baseball early, and then the program disappears and other programs too. And then Terry, you're hearing this as Ev comes home and he's sharing these stories and going on the plane with the team and this incredible like moment, right? This is real work that he's doing by traveling with the team and doing this and being a chaplain for the football team. And it's a crazy week from Friday to Sunday when you get home, and to be somebody that's there for the people and not just for the wins and losses. So was that part of what led you to being like, FCA might be, God might be calling me there too?
Well, when he first started, we would have a little gathering at the university and give him hot dogs and food. It was always about the food.
Always.
Get the food. And there was some female athletes there and that had become leaders. So I saw that there was girls involved, which with the guys, it wasn't that, it wouldn't be my passion or whatever. And I just realized when we did this event that, I don't know, I felt like I was supposed to be working with him, which, like I said before, would have been the craziest thing ever. I'm going to work with you. I didn't really care for sports unless somebody was in them. I supported my husband by going to the games. And then eventually, at the end of his career in high school, I said, I'm not going to your games anymore. I'm tired of being cold. I don't know anybody who's playing. So I never went to college. So I didn't know what it was like to be away from home, because I went from my home to our home. I never had roommates. I didn't have anything like that. I never taught a Bible study. I went to a Bible study, but I never taught a Bible study. Everett hired me as his administrative assistant, and I went to Kansas City to do a little training, and that was crazy. The poor gal, she had to keep saying, Terry, are you on the right page with the computer? And I'm like, I'm not going to be his computer guy or his computer person. I don't know what I'm going to be. And there was a basketball leader, Leah Zabla. She was really good. And I would visit with the girls and stuff. And I decided when I came on board, I said, I'm going to have a girls' Bible study. And so I started looking up girls or basketball Bible studies, because I didn't know what, I don't know about athletes. I don't know about college. I don't know about Bible studies. So I was trying to find a basketball Bible study. And of course, I couldn't find any basketball Bible study. And Everett said he was doing, what were you doing?
I think we were doing a summer Bible study, Joshua.
Joshua. He goes, oh, I'm going to do Joshua with the guys. He said, it's great men's study. So I looked at his study and I said, this is a great woman's study. I can turn this into a woman. Well, Leah asked me if the basketball team could come to our house just for a fun day, because we had a swimming pool. So I said, sure. So I went out there and just sat and listened to them. And they were all talking about how insecure they were and how great it was to be at our house where nobody was judging them. They're not too tall. They don't have too many muscles. Their hair isn't right, or the typical woman thing. And God tapped me on the shoulder and said, because I thought, how am I going to do this? I don't know how to do this. I don't know anything about the sports. And he said, they're just little girls in big girls' bodies that happen to play basketball. And I'm like, oh, well, I know what it's like to be a girl or a woman.
And raise girls.
And I have four daughters, yes. And we've been through a lot of stuff. So we started, or I started that basketball Bible study. And I don't know.
Yeah, and these studies were taking place in the summer. We just...
Yeah, it was at our
house. At our house. It was pretty incredible. Really, our ministry was growing. We... After going to the University of Louisville for a chaplain's conference and understanding their game plan, we completely became about trying to make disciples. And our win was when our disciples made disciples. And we put together a strong leadership team with athletes from a variety of sports. And that certainly helped to build our ministry. But one of the key components was when Terry came on staff and was able to minister and mentor the female athletes, it exploded. A typical Monday night, which we called come and see, basically, it was our, but it wasn't super deep, but it was about getting athletes with their teammates and feeling comfortable there because he was here. And I don't know anything about the Bible and or God, but because I have a teammate that goes and he invited me, I'm going to come. And then Wednesday nights at our house, we did what we called digging deeper. And for those kids that wanted to go deeper, we would have a deep Bible study at our place. And so it was like a snowball rolling down a hill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But honestly, when Terry came on board, it was a game changer.
I remember the first gathering I had at our house, the girls, I don't remember who the girls were, but they were sitting on the floor and I was having to freak out that they weren't on the furniture, and we had a dog and the dog was crawling all over them, and I'd made chocolate chip cookies. And after they left, I just felt like, oh, this was not good. They didn't even sit on the furniture, anything. I got a text from one of the girls. I have no clue who she was, but she said, "You have no idea what it was like to be in a house that was decorated, that had a dog, that we got chocolate chip cookies. I got to sit on the floor with my sibling or my sisters in my sports. And you have no idea what that was for me because I was so homesick." And I didn't, because I'd never been, I went from my mom and dad to being married, so I didn't know what that was like. And I thought it was a total flop. And so God did things that was beyond our wildest dream. We ended up taking 10 kids on a mission trip to Guatemala and got in trouble with FCA because we were supposed to be, they had set up something at that time where you were supposed to go to a certain region, but we connected with this basketball coach that was amazing. He had come in with his team, and his teammate had gotten hurt, and we got to pray with them at UND and he told us about this mission in Guatemala. So we had been to Ethiopia through our church, so we just fashioned what we were supposed to do, how to gather money and get all these kids to get there, by what we had done. And it was unbelievable. I don't know. God was just like, I don't even know what to say, but he did. But
it's amazing to sit here and see you guys remember these stories and share these stories. And it's not, none of it has been because Ev and Terry are so great. It's all been God has shown up in such big ways and just being present and
yes,
faithful
and consistent. And it was the retreats that we would have and the students that they would share. I mean, they share real life struggles, hard struggles. There was a lot of tears that I cried over for them.
Yeah, the early athletes retreats, and I think they're still going on. We were part of that, and we just saw our numbers at UND just mushroom. The last couple of years that we were with FCA, I think we had almost 40 athletes from UND that would go to these retreats, and they were super powerful, super, like, the chains were coming off.
Yeah.
A lot of these athletes, and story after story, and just being able to be part of that and watch these kids grow in their faith, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and it was super rewarding for us to know that we had been part of that.
And my idea of an athlete not being one was they're spoiled, they get school paid for, they're real popular. And when I saw what they had to do and how their workouts, their routine, their traveling, their studies, and then they would fit Monday nights in and Wednesday nights in, and then they would meet me at the bookstore for coffee. My mind was blown on how much sports takes over their life at college and try to keep your grades up and travel and do all that. And so my eyes were open to what an athlete has to go through by a million times on what I had thought originally. And the other thing I thought was there's all these fans that look at these athletes and it's always great to be a winner, but they're really looking at you when you're losing. They really want to know how you're going to be when you lose. And that was really eye-opening to me and to the kids too, because with Christ, you act different.
For sure.
You know, you're not slamming the ball down and throwing your helmet and running off the field and being all mad. And so that just drew all these other kids to those athletes. And now we see all our athletes. It's a huge family. The kids that we had is a huge family. They've all been in each other's weddings. Some of them are on their second child. They've been getting married.
Terry was an amazing matchmaker because we had a dozen marriages happen because of the connection they had at.
I said, I want to start FCAMatch.com.
And then, of course, being invited to so many different weddings and many times not being able to go, but you just see what's happened with their marriages and their families and how these kids that we knew as athletes are now moms and dads, and so many stories of how they're involved in sharing their faith and planting seeds and doing all those kinds of things. It was just a multiplication ministry that, you know, it just started out. First FCI I ever went to at UND when I came on staff and invited athletes, we had seven. And by that time that we were getting ready to step away, and it wouldn't be unusual to have 100 athletes at FCA. So it was exciting.
At the height of FCA, before we retired, kids were baptizing each other in bathtubs. They were fundraising to get a concert to come to town. They wanted to read the Bible out loud in December. It was like, I don't know, 20 below. We put up a ice fishing tent with heat and a Hunter Pinky. We went over there and it's faces north and the wind's blowing a million miles an hour. And they wanted to read the whole Bible without stopping. They set it up. They put time slots and people filled it out and they got the New Testament read. And all the athletes and all, it was the busiest spot on campus. And the professors would walk by there and they wanted to be. Their goal was for somebody to ask them why they were doing it and so they could talk about Christ to them. And it's 5 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and we're taking the tent over there and it's freezing outside, and he has a propane tank, and Hunter Pinky goes, "Ev, do we have permission to do this?" And we're like, "We don't know. You guys are the one that set this all up. We're just bringing this stuff for you to keep you warm." And it was just, and at our age, we were trying to run with them, like, doing this 24/7 and hanging on to them. I remember at the airport in Guatemala, I was like mother hen, like, "Hey kids, you know, they're 20 feet taller than me. You guys all need to stay together." Well, we're the old people that are scared in the airport. These guys are in the airport, you know, every three times a week, and they ditch us. So it was incredible. And the other thing that was always funny was my homemade secret recipe for chocolate chip cookies. I had to buy 6 pans because I would make them all the time. Of course, they were Sam's Club out of a tub, but they were homemade to them. But yeah, it was incredible. And actually, as I'm talking to you, it's weird how it is, how you can forget things. But I actually, in my spirit right now, just feel like really grateful and thankful and fired up. Like, I think I could do it again. I don't know, because I love the stories and I love the God stories. And there was so many things that only God could do for, I mean, there was like 20 things that had to happen before this one thing could work. And it did. And that was I could talk about that forever. There wasn't any accidents. There wasn't any coincidences. Everything was God. Like that day that I said, "God, you need to prove to me that you exist." He's like, "Wait, I have something for you that you have no idea." And that's what it felt like. It was just unreal.
Any other UND you're thinking of that you want to share? If not, I'll go into kind of my last question. So
I'm pretty sure there's some things, but honestly, I can't remember. There were so many things that we did. We saw God working on a daily basis. It was incredible. It really was. We were blessed to be part of it. So
yeah, I think just as you've shared over the last while, just to think like at 40, you weren't following Jesus. You were on a staff that had some people that were following Jesus. But then to think where God would take you over the next 20 years, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
And when I was working with the girls, I had to read how to date books. I never had godly dating. So I'm 45 and we're married, whatever, 30 years. And I'm reading books on how to date. And there was a great author that had this book. And we did several studies with even across FCA and with some girls in Fargo. Towards the end, we did Zoom. And so on this book that we had, a godly dating book. And I laugh because I'm like, here I am reading about how to date and I've been married 35 years. But I was so thankful that they could hear about that at 19 and they can make the choice. They know about it. They understand it, not where I didn't understand.
Yeah. Wow. So you've been out of FCA ministry now for 5 years and I feel like the momentum that you guys were feeling and were a part of, not just in North Dakota, but I think about across athletics, right? There's really been like, there's something happening right now in the US, especially in college athletics. There's the craziness that all the college athletics is a part of now with NIL and all that stuff. But on the Christian side of things, like there are some really powerful stories coming out. And yeah, just wanted to kind of wrap up with, as you've observed that and just after walking that at UND, and now you see whether it's Oklahoma softball or whether it's Ohio State football this last year or the amazing things, even though we don't want to talk about that other school in North Dakota, but some amazing things that have been happening in Fargo. Just kind of wrap up with that kind of picture of what's going on in collegiate athletics.
I just believe that athletics are such a big part of so many people's lives, whether you're competing as an athlete or you're an armchair quarterback, whatever it is. There are so many opportunities to witness what God is doing, and He has used athletics in such a powerful way over the last 5 or 6 years. It's almost rare now where you don't see an athlete being interviewed where he's, first of all, giving thanks to God or thanking Jesus. And so to me, I'm always excited when I see that. I love it. You know, after the UND games where we were able to pray on the field and NDSU had done the same thing. And when I'm watching a UND game on ESPN2, I'm waiting around for the end to see, are they going to go in the middle? And they continue to do it. And those were cool opportunities. I remember, and maybe it's getting a little off track, but at UND, after the game, the first thing the players would do would go thank the fans. And we had put together a student leadership team and we had a football leadership team. And I remember talking to those guys. I said, you know, really, what would you guys think about thanking God first and then thanking the fans? And these guys started to put a prayer group together in the middle of the field. And initially there might be 6, 7, maybe 15 guys, but eventually it became more or less, and maybe everybody that was there didn't have a heart for God, but they were part of it. They heard their teammates praying. It was an incredible time. And as far as I know, and I haven't been to a UND game in a while, and it's still going on. And there are student leaders on that football team that lead prayer before in the locker room and after the game on the field. And so to me, that's just wow. I got some pictures on Facebook of our early prayer groups and then what happened towards the end. And it was just so much fun to see how that had grown. Yeah, so
sure. Anything else on top of your...
I don't know. We talked a lot. I know that.
That's good.
Hopefully you can dig a couple things out of there.
There will be more than a couple. There will be more than a couple. Thank you so much. This has been really great. It's been great to hear stories and to hear your guys' story, first of all, is super powerful and how God moves. That's what we know. It's not through us. It's God moving and shows up in your life, Terry, through somebody that you had mentioned you had felt comfortable with, that you didn't feel like was trying to push something towards you, but was just a really good representative of what it looks like to walk with Jesus.
Yes.
And changes everything when you least expect it. And then the impact that she had and other coaches had on you and bus ride to Bismarck and triple overtime game and incredible.
There's a lot of stories and God has written them and we get to be part of them.
Absolutely. What a blessing.
Yeah.
What a blessing. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it and be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify Him.